everyone. Hey, Hazel, you get quick real fast. It's going to help if you go something like, yeah! Hello and welcome to Unbought and Unbossed Canadian Political News and Views. This is show number 98. Today is December the 3rd, 2008. Happy birthday, Charlotte. Unbought and Unbossed is an independent voice dedicated to presenting and discussing the political and social issues most relevant to Canadian citizens. This show contends that 9/11 is Canada's single most important issue because the self-inflicted attacks of 9/11 are being used for the overthrow of our democratic and sovereign nationhood, turning Canada into a corporate-driven plutocracy. The official story of the 9/11 terror attacks and the ensuing war of terror are deeply troubling and are at the forefront of this radio program. I strongly encourage listeners to question what you think you know about today's world events and to analyze the motives behind our traditional news sources. Each week, new segments of Unbought and Unbossed offers further evidence for these incredible claims, which are either omitted or distorted by the mainstream corporate media. Turn your televisions off. You are being lied to and conditioned to accept this madness as our inevitable future. We must work to return the future of the human race to its rightful owners. That's you. Our ignore it and maybe it will go away on its own mentality is killing us. It has to end now. It is high time to wake up and to educate, to learn, to work together, and to find the courage to act on our love for one another. Indeed, our every freedom is at stake in this battle for truth and accountability. The prize is nothing less than the health of our collective human soul. Okay, the revolution has begun. I suggest you find your role. Okay, very nice. Bruce Coburn, as always, action, speak louder. Right now we're listening to DJ Shadow. That'll be followed by Ashley McIsaac. That's for the little intro segments here. So what do we have for show number 98? I'll tell you what we got. An interview with Professor Tony J. Hall. He is the founding coordinator of Globalization Studies at Lethbridge University. Professor Hall made his 9/11 Truth debut September 6, 2008 at the Edmonton Questions 9/11 event. In this presentation, he delivered an essay entitled The Lies and Crimes of 9/11, A Canadian View on the War of Terror's Origins. Mr. Hall has been pretty busy. Listen to what he did last week. He hosted a roundtable discussion featuring Professors Graham McQueen, all these are Canadians, Michael Kiefer, John McMurtry. It was presented by the Center for Globalization Studies at the University of Lethbridge, Alberta, Canada. And it was recorded and webcast live from the University of Guelph, Ontario. That was November 19th this week. All four of these professors reject the official explanation given for the events of September 11, 2001. And the discussion revolves around 9/11 from the Canadian perspective, as well as global implications. Now, I do believe that that was part of his a lecture for a class. His students had to listen in, so fantastic. Okay, a little bit more on Mr. Hall. He is the author of The American Empire and the Fourth World. It is the first volume from his Bowl with One Spoon series, which is published by McGill Queen's University Press. The second volume, Earth into Property, Aboriginal History and the Making of Global History, will be out shortly. We'll find out when. So it appears that one of the main goals for Professor Hall is to encourage Canadian academics to publicly speak out about the 9/11 lie. Dr. Hall is just leaving his class around now, and he will join us in the second hour of the show from his home in Lethbridge, Alberta. I have a couple audio pieces tonight. I've got a pretty good cold. I'm faking it pretty good right now, but I'm not going to be doing a lot of talking tonight, so I have some audio pieces. Both of these are on the state of, well, our media. Today's media. First off, we're going to hear from Bill Moyers. He's a longtime journalist and public commentator. He's an American. And this is called What's Wrong with Big Media? This was recorded in January of 07. And the second piece I have is from Dave Von Kleist. It might be Kleist. It is from his film Under Siege. And Dave Von Kleist is the host of a syndicated radio show, The Power Hour, and he has also produced a couple 9/11 related documentaries. So as far as topical news, boy, if you're in Canada, it's really fascinating what's going on right now. There's a coalition of the opposition parties that plan to oust the Harper government. Very interesting to see what's going to happen there. I did hear a real good perspective on this from Green leader Elizabeth May. That was with CTV, so if you want to go to their website, CTV has a six-minute piece of Elizabeth May explaining. I thought that that was a pretty good wrap-up. I would have played it, but I only heard it about an hour ago. So, let me see. We've got the interview with Tony Hall. We've got a couple audio pieces. I'm also going to be reading a little bit from Dr. Hall's paper that he presented in September at the Edmonton Questions event, entitled The Lies and Crimes of 9/11, A Canadian View of the War on Terror's Origins. I'm just going to be looking at the beginning of that. Quite impressive. If you want to get a hold of the transcript of this essay, you can visit edmonton911truth.com. Another exciting thing is that there is going to be a second Edmonton Questions 9/11 event in the coming months. There's a couple names that are being batted around, and I know about them, but I'm not allowed to tell you about them yet. Got to keep it a surprise. So, well done, Edmonton 9/11 Truth. Okay, I think that's about all I need to tell you right now. Oh, what? I do have a new song I'm going to test out on my campus community updates. It's a John Lennon song from his Imagine record. It's I Don't Want to Be a Soldier. So we'll see how that works out in the first campus community update.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Buffalo Springfield, the song Mr. Soul. There's a fantastic, one of my favorite lines from Rock Lines. She said, "You're strange, but don't change." I let her. So there we are. We're going to hear Mr. Soul, then we're going to come back. I'm going to read a little bit from Professor Hall's essay. So I'll see you in a couple minutes. Hey, Neil, thanks a lot for that. What do you think I'm trying to say with that? You know, if I'm the strange one, well, go ahead and change and join the other side. So there we are. Shane, thanks for calling from North Van, and he was listening on his radio. North Van, very impressive. So the clouds are doing well. Actually, he says he listens in quite often, so excellent. That's nice to hear that North Van is picking up this Nanaimo station. Okay, so where we are going to go with this, I'm going to read a piece from Professor Anthony J. Hall, or I'm not too sure if he goes by Anthony or Tony. I keep seeing both, but how about I ask him? That would be a good idea. So he is a professor of, I'm going to guess, globalization studies at the University in Lethbridge, Alberta. And again, this paper was released at the 9/11 Questions event in Edmonton, which will be the first of hopefully many to come. So way to go, Edmonton. So let's take a look at this essay here. And it's called The Lies and Crimes of 9/11, A Canadian View on the War on Terror's Origins. It's really hard for me not to say War of Terror, but I will read it in its correct entirety. So it starts off the piece by framing the issues, and we're probably not going to get too much past this, but let's see what Professor Hall has to say. During this, the season of the 7th anniversary of 9/11, we must continue to increase the effectiveness of our transnational peace lobby aimed at extending the Nuremberg process towards an international investigation into the war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in the name of the war on terror. Such an investigation must begin by asking some fundamental questions about the underlying crime that gave rise to the war on terror. Were the events of 9/11 orchestrated by a very different cast of characters and for very different motives than those identified by those identified in the trial by media that began with unseemly haste on the very day of the great shock? Is the war on terror a war on truth? Good question. Did the official conspiracy theory originate in a web of lies, distortions, and cover-ups, expressed to this day in the dense shroud of public mythology surrounding the events of 9/11? We must empower a credible international tribunal of esteemed jurists with sufficient independence to assess on its own merits the growing body of evidence to indicate that the destruction of the Twin Towers and World Trade Center 7, together with the hit on the Pentagon, were caused by something considerably more elaborate than the actions of 19 young Saudis equipped with nothing but box cutters, flight training, and jihadist zeal. So it appears there that Mr. Hall is asking for an international tribunal. Okay, let's see what else we can learn here. Too much state terror and too much state criminality has occurred since 9/11 not to revisit the scene of the crime that created the springboard for such systematic and unrelenting abuses of authority and sacred truths, trusts vested in our governments. Was the whole 9/11 operation really planned and instigated by a band of Islamic extremists acting alone? Was the whole undertaking really planned and coordinated in distant Eurasian caves, ones conveniently located on planned pipeline routes, meant to tap the vast, large reserves of unexploited Middle Eastern oil? Was the role of Wall Street in the 9/11 in the events of 9/11, confined to that of victim? Or are some central figures in America's commercial capital more implicated in the crime's planning, execution, and outcomes than our government and the commercial media would have us believe? And then, of course, they ask the three big questions. Who benefited most from the events of 9/11? Who had the motives? And who had the means? Wouldn't any truly independent inquiry into what actually transpired on 9/11 begin by addressing such fundamental questions and then work from there? And that's a pretty good thing. I'd like to see some teachers out there say, ask their students, well, what, how is it that Al-Qaeda benefited? What were their motives and what means did they have to demolish the buildings? And you'll find out that it's so unlikely, the possibilities are so low that these Islamic extremists, that they benefited, because they certainly didn't. So, just a little bit of common sense there should clear this all up. We just need courage. That's what we're lacking. And Mr. Hall seems to have found some courage, and he is encouraging other Canadian academics to speak out. So I'm going to read one more short piece here. The next section is From Manifest Destiny to the Cold War to the War on Terror. Let's take a minute and go from there. Again, I'm reading the beginning of the essay, which can be found in its entirety at Edmonton911truth.com. You will find a link to it there. So, the War on Terror continues old patterns that developed in the transcontinental, hemispheric, and global expansions of the United States. This 21st century war, without end, gives new expression to the old mythology of American manifest destiny. The term manifest destiny is a code to identify the idea that God Himself has given ample manifestation to His wish that the people, government, and corporations of the United States have a special role to play in realizing their hegemonic destiny of Western civilization. And we should not forget that in the 19th century, the public mythology of manifest destiny generated broad public support for the U.S. annexation of Texas, Mexico, Hawaii, and the Philippines. The adherents of Manifest Destiny also planned to acquire the northern portion of North America. My country, however, was saved from falling under the reign of the Stars and Stripes, as I outlined in considerable detail in his book, The American Empire and the Fourth World. Of course, he's talking about the War of 1812. Okay, one more little piece. By presenting the conflict as an epic struggle between savagery and civilization, the War on Terror is being sold to the public in much the same guise as the U.S. Indian Wars and the scores of similar invasions that have stripped indigenous peoples of their lands and resources around the world. The War on Terror's propagandistic subtext would picture our soldiers as champions of democratic salvation, shining the light of Judeo-Christian civilization even into those dark Eurasian caves where Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, and the axis of false and evil religion are said to dwell. Pretty simple. It's just create a monster and blame it on him. So, well done, Tony Hall. I'm looking forward to our chat in about 40 minutes or so. So that should whet our appetite a little bit, I hope. And moving right along, let's move into the first piece looking at big media and the trouble that it's doing as, you know, they had Osama bin Laden that couple hours into that day. He was guilty, you know, and that's all that they kept saying from that day forward was Osama bin Laden. So here is going to be Bill Moyers talking about what's wrong with the big media. So I will see you with the campus community updates after that. Hang in there, friends.
The third pillar of American democracy, an independent press, is under sustained attack, and the channels of information are choked. A few huge corporations now dominate the media landscape in America. Almost all the networks carried by most cable systems are owned by one of the major media conglomerates. Two-thirds of today's newspapers are monopolies. As ownership gets more and more concentrated, fewer and fewer independent sources of information have survived in the marketplace. And those few significant alternatives that do survive, such as PBS and NPR, are under growing financial and political pressure to reduce critical news content and to shift their focus in a mainstream direction, which means being more attentive to establishment views than to the bleak realities of powerlessness that shape the lives of ordinary people. What does today's media system mean for the notion of an informed public cherished by democratic theory? Quite literally, it means that virtually everything the average person sees or hears outside of her own personal communications is determined by the interests of private, unaccountable executives and investors whose primary goal is increasing profits and raising the country's share price. Boy citizen, this small group of elites determine what ordinary people do not see or hear. In-depth coverage of anything, let alone the problems real people face day to day, is as scarce as sex, violence, and voyeurism are pervasive. Successful business model or not, by democratic standards, this is censorship of knowledge by monopolization of the means of information. In its current form, which Barry Diller happily describes as oligopoly, media growth has one clear consequence. There is more information and easier access to it, but it's more narrow and homogenous in content and perspective, so that what we see from the couch is overwhelmingly a view from the top. The pioneering communication scholar Murray Edelman wrote that opinions about public policy do not spring immaculately or automatically into people's minds. They're always placed there by the interpretations of those who most consistently get their claims and manufactured cues publicized widely. For years, the media marketplace for opinions about public policy has been dominated by a highly disciplined, thoroughly networked ideological noise machine, to use David Brock's term, permeating the slogans concocted by big corporations, their lobbyists, and their think tank subsidiaries. Public discourse has effectively changed the meaning of American values. Day after day, the ideals of fairness and liberty and mutual responsibility have been stripped of their essential dignity and meaning in people's lives. Day after day, the egalitarian creed of our Declaration of Independence is trampled underfoot by hired experts and sloganeers who speak of the death tax, the ownership society, the culture of life, the liberal assault on God and family, compassionate conservatism, weak on terrorism, the end of history, the clash of civilizations, no child left behind. Even managed to turn the escalation of a failed war into a surge. As if it were a current of electricity through a wire instead of blood spurting from the ruptured vein.
Okay. Dance your feet off. Hey, welcome back. Of course, you're listening to Unbought and Unbossed, Canadian political news and views on CHLY 101.7 FM, Radio Malaspina. This, of course, is John Lennon. I don't want to be a soldier. I don't want to die. We need another kind of soldier nowadays, a truth soldier, perhaps. Okay, let's get on to the campus community updates. And that is going to do it for Campus Community Updates Volume 1. Oh, no. Next, I've got a silly piece here. It's Cheech and Chong, actually, and this is from the white world of sports. Basketball Jones is the track, and... Well, it can't be serious all the time now, can we? So let's have a little bit of fun now. George Harrison, by the way, is on guitar. So this is Cheech and Chong. For those of you that are too young to know, they started out making records, doing comedy albums. And, of course, they moved into movies. And then, they've taken off from there, haven't they? So here it is, Basketball Jones, Cheech and Chong.
Coach, what we meant is your one loss record. Now, you're the winningest coach in the history of high school basketball.
That's right.
And your team has won over 455 games this season alone.
That's right.
And your star center, Tyrone Shoelaces, is averaging over 132 points a game.
That's wrong.
Wrong?
Yeah, he's averaging over 132 points a game.
Oh, that's right. Coach, let's talk about shoelaces for a bit. Here's a boy who's only 4'11", yet he leads the league in rebounding.
That's right.
Assists.
That's right.
Scoring.
That's right.
Scoring over 65 points a game.
That's right.
He seems like he does everything but sell popcorn during halftime.
No, he don't sell popcorn.
Tell us, what is the secret of his success? What makes him such a great basketball player?
Well, why don't you just ask him that yourself? Come on over here, Tyrone. Come on over here. The man here want to talk to you.
Tyrone, hello. Glad to meet you, sir. Tyrone, what makes you such a great basketball player?
What makes me such a great basketball player? Why, that's simple. I got a basketball Jones.
Yeah, Daddy got a basketball Jones.
A basketball Jones? What's a basketball Jones?
Go on, tell him what a basketball Jones is, Tyrone.
What's a basketball Jones? That's simple. A basketball Jones is when you love basketball so much, you are like a junkie. Basketball Jones! I got a basketball Jones! Got a basketball Jones, oh baby! Since I was a little baby, I always be dribbling. In fact, I was the baddest dribbler in the whole neighborhood. Then one day, my mama bought me a basketball, and I loved that basketball. I took that basketball with me everywhere I went. That basketball was like a basketball to me. Set a pick for me at the free throw line of life. Someone I can pass to. Someone to hit the open man on the give and go.
Very nice, very nice. That is Richie Havens with Handsome Johnny. And of course, that is what started off Woodstock in 1969, that song there. 3 days of music and peace and dirtiness and sex and drug abuse and alcoholism and a lot of great music, though. A lot of great music. Okay, so that was Richie Havens, and before that, of course, was Cheech and Chong talking about a basketball, Jones. I guess basketball would probably be my favorite sport. I don't pay too close attention to sports anymore. I did at one time, but, well, I'm a little bit better now. Okay, we're going to move on now to another audio piece. This comes to us from Dave Von Kleist. He is a radio show host, The Power Hour, and he's also produced a couple 9/11-related documentaries. Under Siege is one of them, and that is where this cut comes from. And he's talking about media, as was Bill Moyers a couple minutes ago. So let's carry on with this media subject here. So, okay, I'll see you in about 8, and we'll have another campus community update, and then we're going to get on the phone with Professor Anthony Hall. Or is it Tony? Damn it, let's call it Tony. Tony Hall, professor at Lethbridge University in Alberta, who is one of Canada's newest truth activists, and he's doing his best to encourage other academics to say enough's enough and to, you know, find that courage and speak out and say enough's enough. Okay, so let's do that.
You know, there are some talk show hosts and news anchor that claim to give you the straight story. They're going to tell you the truth. They have a no-spin zone, when in fact, if you could see, if the camera were to pan out, they'd probably be a blur from the waist down because they're dancing so hard. Believe me, they are spinning as hard as they can. And anybody who steps outside of their particular view of the world is relentlessly attacked. It's really easy to see because when they're doing interviews, they'll bring on one person to represent one view and another person to represent another view and maybe even a third person. And it's almost like a Jerry Springer school of interviewing, because they'll set one off, they'll set the other off. Next thing you know, you got three people all screaming at the same time, and the interviewer does nothing to stop it. And that's, in their view, fair and balanced reporting. It's nothing but propaganda. And, you know, when you start looking for alternative sources of information, of course, people go to public broadcasting or NPR or stuff like that, and they totally forget you know, the introduction of these television programs, these TV networks, or these radio broadcasts usually start with an announcement by the underwriter. The following program is brought to you by a grant from Union Carbide. Wait a second. Is this reporter going to tell you any information that might be derogatory towards Union Carbide or any of the other main corporations that are funding them? Of course not. So how can we even expect to get the truth from your national public radio or public broadcasting systems when, in fact, the money that pays their bills and pays the salaries is coming from the very corporations that need to be exposed? The climate in the United States right now is one of tremendous unrest. There's a constant debate, whether it be controlled or created or not, between the right and the left. And the Republicans and the Demopublicans and the conservatives and the liberals, and people are butting heads constantly and losing faith in their system. They're seeing the corruption in government. They're seeing corruption everywhere they go. And it seems like the standards are getting lower and lower and lower, and people are getting more disgusted with the United States government. Well, is this serving a greater purpose? Is this preparing some people to accept and even have a desire to allow the United Nations to come in and lead the way? There are a lot of folks on the left or on the liberal side that are embracing the United Nations without ever having investigated how the United Nations came into being, where they came from, who funded them. And this is a tremendous danger, because I think that if people were to examine the concept of the United Nations, how it was put together, who wrote the charter, they begin to understand that the very people that they are protesting against are the people that put the United Nations in place. So if we allow our Constitution and our government to go by the wayside and say, oh, well, it didn't work, and the great republic that the United States used to be fell flat on its face, and it's destroyed itself. We're going to have to go to the United Nations. We are voluntarily jumping out of the frying pan and into the fire. A few years ago, a USA Today poll asked the question, whom do you trust? 6% said that they trust the federal government, and 24% said that they trust the mainstream media. I ask you, where do we get our information from? From official government spokespersons and from the mainstream talking heads. So if 94% of the Americans don't trust their federal government and 76% don't trust their mainstream media, how are we going to be able to make informed decisions? How can we determine the destiny of our country? We now know that we can write all the letters that we want to our representatives and our senators, and they go unread. You can email them and you'll get a computer-generated response. You can make your phone calls and your cries fall on deaf ears. We now know that there is a very serious question into the integrity of our voting system. And we also know that the legal system has been corrupted as well. So common sense dictates that if you can't vote them out, you can't sue them, you can't have them arrested, what else do we have other than massive demonstrations and, God forbid, an outright revolution? The only possible way out of this mess, obviously, is to inform the American people on a massive scale, which means we would have to somehow find a way to get this message out in the mainstream media. There has been discussion in the past about massive nationwide demonstrations, all coordinated to occur at the same time at every television station, every network affiliate, coast to coast, and force them to open up the television cameras like they used to in the old days when a president was assassinated or when they were walking on the moon. Have them open up all of the nationwide television cameras and bring to the table some of the issues that have been ignored and covered up for all these years. Issues like the Federal Reserve, the IRS, where the true origins of the United Nations, what happened in Oklahoma City or Waco or TWA Flight 800 or 9/11. All of these issues. What happened to our POWs? What's going on with the Gulf War illness? What's going on with experimentation of our troops now? All this information has to be given to the American people. They've got to get this information in order to make informed decisions. And my personal opinion is the only way that that's going to happen is if America will rise up, rediscover what their true heritage is, understand what it is to be the land of the free and the home of the brave. Because we won't be free unless we have the courage to stand up and have our voices counted. And not be intimidated because we might have our license plate taken down, or we might be seen as some sort of fringe or kook, or we might have our name put on a list. I'll tell you right now that if your name isn't on a list, you're not doing enough for your country. The founding fathers pledged their lives and their fortunes and their sacred honor. I don't think it's too far of a leap to understand that your elected officials are certainly not going to pledge their lives. They're not going to pledge a penny of their fortune, and by these two, they demonstrate that they have no sacred honor. How many of your elected officials have sons or daughters that are serving in the Iraq War? I think you start to understand what's going on here. We, the people, are their cannon fodder. They have sent our sons and daughters to fight their wars so that they can have their spoils. This is what it's all about. It's imperialism and it's fascism. And some folks hear that and say, oh, you must be anti-patriotic or anti-government. I am not anti-government. This government is supposed to be of, by, and for the people. This government is supposed to be following the guidelines or the rule book, which is called the United States Constitution. And it was Abraham Lincoln that says, we seek not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow those that would pervert it. And I think that's where we are right now. The only way we're going to be able to overcome this is to somehow inform all of America on a massive scale, which means to take back the media.
Okay, very nice. Fine words from Dave Von Kleist. That's from Under Siege. Boy, a lot of truth in that. Well said. Okay, let's carry on. It is campus community update time. We've got the little piggy song here. So what have we... let me tell you again that you're listening to CHLY 101.7 FM in Nanaimo, Radio Malaspina. We're also online at www.chly.ca. And you're listening to the Unbought and Unbossed show. Interview with Professor Tony Hall coming up in about 10 minutes or so. There we go. Okay. So we are just about there. What I'm going to do now is put on a song, and I'm going to get Tony Hall on the phone, and that's what the remainder of our night is going to look like. So, this song right here is Love is a Rose by Linda Ronstadt. It's originally a Neil Young song, so I guess Neil's getting two songs today, because that's Mr. Soul. I started the show off. That's a Neil Young, so there's the Canadian content. Boy, I'm from California, and Linda Ronstadt was huge, huge in California. She owned the place. She slept with the governor, the whole thing. So there we are. Love is a Rose, Linda Ronstadt. Be back with Tony Hall.
Love is a rose, but you better not pick it. It only grows when it's on the vine. Handful of thorns, and you know you've missed it. Lose your love when you say the word mine.
Okay, friends, welcome back. That was Linda Ronstadt, Love is a Rose. So there we are, a double shot of Neil Young, so to speak.